You're listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL. The interview continues.
You bought the plastics industry as an example. As you know, in the 1980s and 90s, when social movements took on big business like this, the cigarette industry and other industry, and had massive battles with them, but ended up making big differences in the end.
Yeah.
Do you see a parallel to those examples to what's happening today?
Yes, I do. As the marketing and promotions people who manage these campaigns, whether it was the cigarette industries in the 60s and the 70s, or the plastics, you know, petrochemical companies in the 80s and the 90s, and now the oil and gas sector, they all use the same marketing strategy. They all use the same techniques. And we are learning that we can use the same techniques to challenge them in the courts, that we know they are responsible. They knew, the oil and gas sector knew 60 years ago that increasing production was going to affect our climate. They knew this. They wrote it down. It was studied and researched. And while we've known about it, scientists have known about it for over 100 years. The oil and gas sector acknowledged, big companies acknowledged 60 years ago already that they knew this was going to happen. So now we're taking them to court. Well, not we are, but there are large groups like EcoJustice and Sierra Legal and so on, taking these groups to court, taking these corporations to court. And that's what they did with the plastics industries, and that's what they did with the cigarette industries, is just make it expensive for them to lie, make it expensive for them not to take responsibility, make it expensive for them to not act on what they know is happening. And that seems to be the bottom line, unfortunately, is almost inevitably money. It's rarely conscience or morals or ethics. I wish it was, but it's not. That's what we're doing. When I say we, I mean not just me, but thousands and thousands of people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you see the oil and gas industry starting to make more profit because of this Ukraine-Russia crisis? Rather than going the right way, do you see it going the opposite way now?
Well, that's our biggest fear, of course, is that this will justify increased production. And the only way you can increase production is through increased infrastructure. That means more pipelines, more refining, more everything. And once that infrastructure is in place, it needs to be paid for. And that means you can't shut them down until they've earned a profit. And that could be another 40 or 50 years. We don't have a 40 or 50 year window. We have less than 10 years. And we already produce enough oil and gas on the planet to supply all our needs, and in fact, much more than our needs. So it's insane to increase that production. Right now, the truth is, in Russia, very little has happened to the oil and gas exports. Very little.
Mm-hmm.
The sanctions are all over the place, but guess what? They're not applying them to oil and gas, mm-hmm. because everybody in Europe needs oil and gas right now, and it's coming from Russia. And one of the reasons that Russia wants to control Ukraine, and we know this, is that there are untapped natural gas fields and oil fields in Ukraine that they can't afford to develop. They just don't have the money or the resources or the investment capital to develop their own. So they were kind of reaching out to Germany over the last decade or so, and there's some interest from Germany. Well, that scared the hell out of Russia, because Russia wants to control, naturally, they want to control oil and gas, the market for Europe. And they don't want competition. And so that's part of the reason, I hate to say it, but that is part of the reason they're playing this game, is that they don't want the West taking control. And we are still fighting global battles, whether it was in Iran, Iraq, Syria, now the Ukraine. We are fighting energy battles. And that's really, really disturbing that few, if any, are calling it an energy battle. But in part, it is an energy battle. However crazy the leadership in Russia is, and however, it's still in a way a control and energy battle. And so there is no significant reduction right now in the movement of oil and gas. It's minuscule, but of course the big multinational producers and refiners are looking at this as an opportunity to increase their production and make more money. And you can't blame them for trying. They're not evil. They're just greedy.
And as you said, the temperature is starting to rise. And as it rises more, we're going to see more and more consequences. As you know, we this year have had the worst climate from heat domes to the Fraser Valley flooding. Sure. To forest fires that are getting out of control. Can you talk more about the consequences if we don't act and act quickly?
Yeah. Talk about bringing it home. We're now looking at our tourism industry is a good example. There are tourist organizations in BC that know when our smoke season is. And there are also, you know, international groups that use BC as a tourist destination, and they know, oh, that's smoke season. You don't want to go there during smoke season. And you can't tell me that that's not severely negatively impacting our tourism income. Of course it is. We look at the Fraser Valley, one little flood on the Nooksack, and look at the consequences. That's not even including, a massive early runoff from the Fraser River, which will almost certainly happen within the next decade or two. And there's no way we can control that. It's too late. We've already lost so much of our forests, and the runoff, you know, from those mountains goes directly into the Fraser Basin and rushes downstream. And all we've been doing is building our dikes higher and higher when we know from examples around the world that doesn't solve a problem. It just creates more problems downstream or creates more problems right where you build the dikes. So in the long term, that's not a solution. But that's where the climate crisis is really hitting home. And I know we tried a couple of years ago to encourage Abbotsford to declare a climate crisis like Toronto has done. And I think 14 major cities across Canada have declared a climate crisis. It's just a symbolic move. But what it does is it allows a municipality to more quickly access funds and resources when needed. And here we have a crisis, a disaster. And had we declared a climate crisis perhaps a couple of years ago, we may have been able to more efficiently move funds around and access federal and provincial funding. And so there you go. This is part of the mitigation that we're going to have to be dealing with in the next several decades, learning how to adapt to the inevitable. And that means more fires, more floods, more extreme weather, drought, massive negative impacts to our agriculture in ways that we can't even imagine. The cost to agriculture for the climate crisis is just astronomical, and we're not even considering that. So we need to do that locally, right at the very local level.
And I wanted to go back to social movements, and we saw what Greta's movement did prior to the pandemic, and how she got the youth from around the world engaged in what difference that was making. She was going to the UN. She was speaking at the UN. She was speaking truth to power. And there was starting to be some action. And all of a sudden, COVID struck, and all of that is gone away now. How do you think, knowing that the University of the Fraser Valley and other great universities around British Columbia are socially active, how do you think we can get the youth engaged again for this social movement?
Give them hope and tell them that we'll support them. That's what I'm doing more and more now, is I'm asking younger people said, what do you want to do? How can I help? There's so much that needs to be done. At the same time, everybody's busy, and young people, I know how difficult it is to try to get an education, and also to be an activist is really challenging. But I think it's a sort of problem that needs to be addressed from all different directions. We had this opportunity 3 years ago where the youth movements across the world were taking the leadership, and it was exciting. And I'm hoping that will regrow. I mean, right now we're in the middle, of course, of a horrible, horrible crisis in the Ukraine. And I suppose that's our focus right now. And it's necessary, sure. But it has distracted us from the even bigger crisis. And that's a global, the climate crisis. And so we can't let that go on forever. We have to get as quickly as possible. We need to find a way to recover the global movement and support it wherever we can.
And we covered a lot of ground, and I want to bring you on again one day. But as the final message to the people listening to this program, what would you like to say to sum it up?
Okay, there is some good news from the science community around the world that the recovery from our carbon emissions problem won't take as long as we had originally anticipated. The modeling is now showing that if originally it was thought that once you carbon load the atmosphere, it could take 40 to 50 years before the temperatures start to drop again. Right? If you go down to net zero or neutral, whatever, it would take 40 to 50 years. But now we're seeing the modeling is looking like it would be more like less than 10 years even. So it's much quicker. The recovery would be much quicker than we originally thought. And that's pretty exciting, is that if we act now, we don't have to wait two generations for the results for the benefits. It could take less than a decade to start seeing the benefits. That means less forest fires, less floods, less extreme weather, less displaced millions of people around the world because of that water crisis or food crisis and starvation. In other words, the hope here is that action now will be worthwhile. And it will be, the results and the payback will be much quicker than we originally thought. So that's good news. I mean, we don't have a lot of good news, but that's certainly some of it. Yeah.
If I can have a quick follow-up, how can young people be more involved in your movement here in the Fraser Valley?
Oh boy, I just go online and look at. Look for groups that are acting on climate change and the climate crisis here in the Fraser Valley, and start something on your own. Just start connecting and networking with your friends and with other students, and say, I know there's groups at UFE right now, sustainability groups at UFE right now that are doing wonderful work, and they're much more knowledgeable about these things than I am. So they're the ones who should actually be on these radio shows, not me. But there's also researchers at UFE that are doing tremendous work, there's so much to be learned. But certainly, right here we have the knowledge and the resources to make a big difference.
And thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule, and we'll love to have you back again.
Okay, Sharjeet, it was fun talking with you.
Thank you for listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL. Join me again next week as I have another great guest for you.